Hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to the Catholic Sphere. You know, each week we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. Now, this week our subject is theology, the topic, I'm pro-choice, not pro-abortion. That's the difference. But is that really just semantics? That's the question we'll take up today with our panel. Joining us from the world over, it's a prolific writer and author and parish priest. It's Father Gerald Murray. You know him well. He joins us from Massachusetts. We also have the Cato Byrne Senior Fellow and Director of the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and the host of EWTN's very popular series, Transgenderism, What Every Catholic Needs to Know, Mary Rice Hassan. She joins us from Washington, D.C., and as always, my compadre, it's the one and only EWTN's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan, always with me on this show to keep me on the straight and narrow. He's in our theology studio. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining me on this panel. We want to talk about the idea. Let me start off with you, Father Jerry, because we've heard this for many years over the idea of that I'm not pro-abortion, I'm pro-choice, there's a big difference. And it struck me that many times people hid behind the legal idea, well, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, so my vote really doesn't matter about it. But now with that off the table, many times people are voting directly for plebiscites or amendments or other things in their particular state to have abortion available. Does that change a person's perspective? Should it change their conscience? And does it change their culpability?
Well, you know, the use of euphemisms and misdirection in language is an ancient problem, and it's usually to try and justify sinful behavior. So, you know, people want to get drunk, just want to say, well, you know, I just want to enjoy myself to excess, you know, or something like that. As regards pro-abortion or anti-abortion, the anti-abortion crowd is very happy to say that because they know that abortion's wrong and they're against it. But pro-abortion people want to say, oh, I'm not in favor of abortion, I'm just in favor of it being legal. So therefore, I'm going to say I'm in favor of having the choice to keep it legal. It's the only choice they accept, by the way. They don't accept the choice to keep it illegal. So they say, I'm pro-choice. Mm-hmm. That doesn't go. It doesn't work. And sad to say, it does dull consciences because people take comfort in the idea, I don't really support abortion. I just don't care if anybody has one, and I think it should be legal. Mm-hmm. The problem is abortion is not like, you know, other types of medical interventions in which you cure a problem in your body. Abortion is you kill a child in the body of its mother. And that's the fact. That's why we have to use straight language. Now, what's going on politically in the United States is very discouraging from one point of view, because we are having people now coming forward and becoming more militant in favor of abortion. But now we have the choice to make. Will we be a godly society in which law protects life, or will we be a selfish, barbaric society in which powerful people get to kill little people who get in their way?
Well, unfortunately, we've seen how when that happens in other societies, it doesn't bode well for everyone, not just little children inside the womb. Mary, let me ask you about the idea that so much of this is a women's issue. We hear that basically men can't speak about it. This is a women's issue. And that many times in elections, this is what's going to turn it. Women are going to believe that this is something they need to have. So when did women become convinced, since it seems like the majority are in some level, that this is a right that needs to be available, at least to other people?
Yeah, I think one of the problems is women have become convinced that they've been oppressed or men are trying to rule their lives. And this is a misdirection. And let me give you an example. I was giving a talk at a law school a number of years ago on abortion, and I laid out the truth, the reality, scientific reality, that the unborn child is a human being. And one of the law professors who was there was a woman who had been previously with the National Abortion Rights Action League, in other words, vehemently pro-abortion. And she said, okay, I'll accept that that's a human being and abortion kills it. But the question is, who gets to decide? Who gets to decide if that child lives? And so she went on this riff of just about women need the power to decide. And then she got this applause. from all the women in the audience. So it was complete misdirection. Instead of focusing on what happens in abortion and the fact that there is another human being there, they say, no, 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 let's change the subject. You, woman, you need to have the power to decide things for your own life, which in an abstract sense is true, but there's a limit to everyone's power to decide things in their own life. I don't get to go, you know, shoot the guy who cuts me off in traffic. You don't get to just do anything you want. But women have been duped. And it's honestly, it is so painful to watch what we're seeing right now with women championing the right, supposed right, legal right, to kill their own children. And that is seen as the measure or hallmark of their political power or their agency as an autonomous individual. It's just so true. Right.
Well, we think back to the Democratic National Convention back in the summer. They had that van going around that offered free vasectomies and abortion after pills. And also the big way you could find it was this giant inflatable IUD was there. And it strikes me, Mary, that we had the Bill Clinton world of the kind of phony, you know, well, it's rare, safe, and legal, to where it's everywhere, and we don't care if it's safe or not, as long as it's legal, and it's got to be legal for all 9 months. And even in some documentation here from a group allegedly calling itself Catholics for free choice or pro-choice, you know, they say, we don't even just want Roe v. Wade back. We want more than that.
I think one of the things that you could see that pulls the mask off in terms of what choice is really about is that when it comes to looking at what politicians are actually doing, the pro-choice crowd, so to speak, is working as hard as they can to eliminate any choice that would support the choice for life. So we have seen law enforcement people going after trying to prosecute pregnancy resource centers, saying they're fraudulent, et cetera. We're seeing attempts to prevent pro-life physicians from using progesterone to reverse the effect of the abortion pill. So in other words, they're not really all about choice. They're about ensuring that as many children as are considered unwanted, at least for a moment, meet death, and that they are going to facilitate that. It's not about choice at all.
And Colin, let me go to you now, because Mary was talking about the idea that, again, understanding, and Father Jerry did too, the idea, choice for what? You know, what are you choosing? And I think you talked about the idea in some of your notes about the idea that if you don't know if a person is present, then you shouldn't act like it isn't. You should act like it is. Explain.
Well, we have to do that in normal circumstances. You could use a number of analogies for this. If you're out hunting with your buddy and a bush moves, are you lawfully able to assume that that was a deer that moved it, or ought you to determine whether your buddy is behind the bush? Common sense would tell you that if you shoot unknowingly, or if you threw a bomb into a dark room without knowing whether there was a human being inside, that you would be criminally liable for the results, at least negligence of doing that. So the argument that Mary was given by the law school professor that, well, somebody has to choose, well, that's not actually true. You make the choice to determine that human beings, from the moment of their conception, because they have the same biological individuality that every other human being has, is deserving of my respect. And the church has a good history in moral theology of how you choose in those kinds of difficult situations. And that is, if it's necessary to save the life of the mother, and the effect of that is indirectly that the child dies, then you go save the life of the mother and accept the death of the child. But what you cannot do is go in purposefully and directly to kill the child in order to liberate yourself from, say, the responsibility that is facing you. So the church have means to solve these problems. It has the understanding of the nature of the problem and how we can morally do it without having to choose either or. Mm-hmm. You're choosing based on the facts and the knowledge of what the situation is, and you're not choosing to kill one of the two patients. Mm-hmm. Both are patients. You're not choosing to kill one of them to save the other. But if you choose to save one and the other dies, say by doing chemotherapy that will also kill the child, then that is an indirect, just as in bombing and warfare, you don't intend the death of civilians, but yet you know that that's a likely consequence.
Right, so we've got collateral damage. That's
Right, it's called the use of the principle of double effect. It has two effects, one good and one evil. You're choosing the good one. You're not using the evil one as the means to get to the good one, which is what is done in abortion. The evil choice is made to get to the good choice of being liberated, good in the minds of the person, being liberated of the responsibility and so on of the child.
So, Father Jerry, going to you, as a parish priest and a kind of lawyer, you deal with, obviously, the public all the time. Your parishioners, and many times having been probably seen quite lightly on the world over, people recognize you, I'm sure, come up and have conversations with you, more so than maybe they used to in the past. So they consider themselves good Catholic, and they have these positions, and then they say, well, you know, I read this thing, Sister Joan Chittister, she said that your morality is deeply lacking if all you want is a child born, but not a child fed, not a child educated, not a child housed. That's not being pro-life, that's being pro-birth. We need a much broader conversation on what the morality of pro-life actually is. So people hear that. They even hear the Pope in the past talking about broadening our concerns, and it makes them confused. They start thinking, well, what exactly is more important? Is there one thing that's more important? Is the seamless garment all the same? Is caring for the environment at some level the same as protecting a child in abortion? Does one weigh off against the other? We're back to that old discussion.
That's it, back to that old discussion. And the presumption, of course, here is that if you're against the killing of unborn children, you're probably in favor of them being starved, abused, and then neglected when they get born, because that's the counter argument being made. This is an illegitimate debating technique. What it's designed to do is get your focus off of the issue at hand, and then to focus on the fact that there's poverty. And since there's poverty, people really need to be helped get out of poverty, but all you're concerned about is trying to make sure that they don't get killed in the womb. The pro-abortion movement has a diabolical intelligence, which means it figures out how to make its argument in a way that's going to convince people that they're doing nothing wrong in having an abortion, and that the people who are against abortion really are haters, are evil people, they have ulterior motives. This is all nonsense. That sister's comment reveals a complete lack of love toward unborn children and the fact that she would impugn the motives of those who want to protect them. And as a priest, you know, you're right, Doug, I can say this, EWTN has a tremendous influence for the good because so many people are confused and they know on EWTN you can find the truth. For this, I give credit to Mother Angelica all the time. Right. In fact, if I get a little feisty at times on Raymond's program, I'm saying, well, Mother Angelica is a lot more feisty than I ever was. But guess what? Being feisty about defending unborn children, that's something I'm happy to engage in. You know, Professor Charles Rice, Mary's dad, one of the great pro-life defenders in public life in the U.S. during his life. And he always made this argument that we don't, as Catholics, favor abortion precisely because God and the natural law teach us it's wrong. So that's the end of the argument. I don't care your other points. Your other points are distractions. We do not kill unborn children and claim it's a good thing because it isn't.
Right. So let me go to you, Mary. In dealing with when you yourself go out and you use that example of speaking at that law particular event, but other Catholic events and things, maybe even you still run into, well, meaning Catholics, Catholic women who, you know, maybe watch, like I said, watch EWTN, but maybe get their news from the three networks, and they think it's like the way it was in the 60s and the 70s with Walter Cronkite, and they're getting it straight instead of realizing how tilted that's all become. And they go and say, well, you know, I read the Guttmacher study, and the Pew Research says that 63% of Catholics think abortion should be legal in most cases. So, you know, I'm actually in the majority of Catholics, so I'm not really not out that on a limb. And I'm not in favor of abortion. I just don't think I can impose my will on other people's belief systems.
Yeah, so we would never say the same about something like slavery. We fought a war over that, right? Because there was an evil that was objective. It is objective to enslave human beings, to treat them as less than human. You can't say, well, you get to choose. And in fact, that's what we had for a while, right? Some states were choosing, and other states were choosing a different option. We all recognized that was untenable, that there was an evil there that needed to be addressed, to be prevented, to be outlawed. Well, the same thing here. This is an evil. So I think, as Father said, we've got to keep our eye real clearly on what's at stake. Mm-hmm. There's an unborn life who deserves the right to continue growing, to flourish, to have life, and to recognize the technique that aims to silence you by saying, well, what about all the kids who go hungry, et cetera? Because here's the reality. It's a red herring to say pro-lifers don't care about lives already born. In fact, people who are people of faith, people who are part of the pro-life community, disproportionately do all sorts of charitable work, caring for those who are sick, who need a place to land, all of that. So that's a red herring. That's not even factually true. But more importantly, we have to recognize right now here in our society, that when it comes to a vote, if you are voting for someone who says they're, quote, pro-choice, the reality is that means that we're going to see public policies that are going to seek to fund abortion, that are going to promote it, that are going to educate young people to believe it's a good pathway, it's empowering, it's liberating. So there are consequences, and we've seen over the decades what those consequences are. It's simply not true to say voting for a, quote, pro-choice position is somehow leaving things on neutral ground and there's, you're not furthering evil. You absolutely are. We can see the evidence.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Moving on to you, Colin, going back in a sense as a takeoff on the title, the idea pro-choice and pro-abortion, is that a distinction without a difference? Isn't that really the case, these days at least?
No, it really isn't. I mean, for all the reasons that both Father and Mary have cited, you can't favor pro-choice as simply a toleration of something. This is very clear, and every Catholic should read it. It wouldn't take them very long to do. Pope John Paul II, in Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, he makes a number of definitive pronouncements using the Petrine authority to teach that abortion is a grave violation of the moral law of the Fifth Commandment specifically, as well as euthanasia. He talks about a lot of the red herrings that Mary mentioned as well, the care for the poor and all of that. He includes that in pro-life, but the starting point is if you don't accept the first principle of justice towards others, what makes you think you're going to accept the second, third, fourth, tenth, or hundredth principle of justice to the living? It's not very likely. You start with the first principle. So the relationship of the Catholic to abortion is, first of all, it is solemnly taught by the Church that abortion is a grave evil. And in moral theology, we speak of degrees of cooperation in evils. Mm-hmm. If we do the thing itself, we commit the evil. If we positively favor and say, yeah, I think that's a good thing, we have the same moral guilt as a person who does the evil. It's grave sin. If we immediately cooperate in something in which a human being dies materially, we give the money, we give the gun, the bullets, or whatever, but we don't do it, we can't say, well, I didn't do it. I just let him do it. Mm-hmm. I gave him the way to do it. that kind of immediate cooperation is always gravely sinful. Mm-hmm. So what most people are arguing about is remote cooperation. I do nothing. I don't consider the evil. I don't do anything about it. And I simply just let it happen. But as Mary noted, when you vote for a candidate, you're not just voting for the individual. You like him, you're voting for him over somebody else, but you're voting for a platform generally. Mm-hmm. And so political conventions give platforms because these are the positions that the general membership of that particular party agrees upon as objectives for the party. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, the members who are elected from that in that party will also support those things. So you can never simply say, well, I like the person, I'm led to vote for him, because they're going to vote for the party things, and therefore you've tacitly agreed to do it. And so even though it's remote, it's very hard to justify. But Pope Benedict gave an answer writing to the bishops of the United States in 2004. He was actually still the prefect of the Doctrine of the Faith in those days. And he said, if you have a proportionate evil, then you could tolerate. And this is a principle Pope John Paul II writes about in Evangelium Vitae, when he says that if legislatures have a one bill favoring abortion that is really awful and a bill that favors abortion but is less awful, then they can vote for the second one, not for the purpose of advancing its what it does, but for the purpose of stopping the worst case. That's not a lesser of two evils. That's stopping the evil itself as much as within your power. Mm-hmm. And the power of the vote is the power of the people to participate in governance, to promote goods, and to stop evils, and it should be used to do that.
Right. So, Father Jerry, let me ask you, you know, one of the things Mary brought up I thought was interesting, and I was wondering what your take was in dealing with people over the years, the idea of basically, people don't want to know the truth. They've kind of settled in their mind, well, I already dealt with this in the 80s or the 90s or whatever went on in my life, and I don't really want to think about it, and you're reminding me of some issue that's very thorny and causes me problems. Just like the people who lived outside of Auschwitz didn't know what was going on inside of Auschwitz. If they didn't, it's because they didn't want to know. I think, how often are you dealing with that, would you say?
Well, certainly in dealing with ordinary people that I meet occasionally, if the topic of abortion comes up, you do find people who have this attitude, I don't want to get involved in that. I'm not big on that topic, but I don't want to tell people what to do. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, well, that unfortunately can be a reflection of cowardice or callousness, that I don't want to confront moral evil, or I don't really care what other people do in life. If they want to hurt themselves and their children, kill their children by abortion, doesn't bother me. This is a problem of overcoming selfishness in society. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important that we have educational means to tell people the fact that you're a citizen of the United States requires that you take an active interest in how your society is governed. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, evil people will do great damage to you and to others. So we have to get involved, and the involvement will be on many different levels, educational, political, cultural, medical. There are lots of things that we can do. We have to get Catholic people basically not to view religion as an individualistic expression of piety on Sundays, and then whatever happens the rest of the week, I'll let people do what they want. To say so-and-so made a choice, that's his or her choice, that's ridiculous. We say God has given us a set of rules, mm-hmm. and God has given us the grace and ability to obey those rules. We want everybody to live that way because the fruit will be happiness and social harmony.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, Mary, as we're getting close to the end, talking about this particular topic and dealing with, regular churchgoers as well, the people the people you deal with, and women especially out there who say, well, I don't really hear about a lot of this. Come election time, the bishops put out something that nobody reads. But when I go to Mass on Sunday, it's not particularly a major topic. I hardly ever hear it talked about. So I hear a lot of other social gospel things brought up on a regular basis. So I'm assuming it's either not that big of an issue or no bigger than any others.
Well, I would encourage priest to speak about it, but speak about it with the invitation to anyone who's hearing you, who has personally facilitated or participated in or undergone an abortion, to realize there's healing, forgiveness, God's mercy is without bounds. I think that's one thing that silences many people. They think perhaps they did something, they had an abortion, they paid for an abortion back when they were younger, and so therefore they can't tell anyone what to do. And that's wrongheaded. We need to remember God forgives us, so we need to hold fast to the truth and offer that same truth to others, not to shrink back in silence and say, well, I can't say anything because I did something wrong. Well, there's forgiveness there for you, but if you love people, you don't want them to make the same mistake. And so we need to speak up. If you're a priest giving a homily, preach the truth, but invite those who may have made mistakes or committed serious wrong to come and receive the healing and mercy of God. That shouldn't keep people away. But failing to speak the truth, that keeps people away in its own way.
Right, and you would think many other cases with ex-drug addicts and other people, the most powerful testimonies are people who obviously, like a Silent No More, who have gone through these things and can relate directly, and it's important that those people speak out. Well, I appreciate all of you joining us for this wonderful panel. Thank you again, Father Gerald Murray, of course, Mary Hassan, and Colin Donovan for being with us today, and thank you for joining us. And don't forget, next week, look for our host, Ryan Penny, talking about Catholics on social media. And that's all we have right here on this edition of The Catholic Sphere. We'll see you next time. Thanks.